From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
All right, good evening. Like the Energizer Bunny, this story keeps going and going and going and going. And one person that who has been on top of that story is Mark Williams. You know Mark as a regular contributor on the Nancy Grace Show, a news director, and all-around good guy. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Great, Dana. How are things up there in the snowy north?
Is there still snow up there?
Well, we finally got rid of the snow, even though it's June 2nd or 3rd, whatever it is. But the story is that, like the Energizer Bunny, is the Anthony story. And I wanted to bring you on tonight, spend some time with you, and talk about what's been going on with it. But let's start with the Andrea Lyon connection here. What's up with that?
She is a death penalty attorney from DePaul University in Chicago. Baez unveiled her last week. He's the defense attorney. Jose Baez is the defense attorney for Casey Anthony. And so he just made the introductions all around. The judge has not ruled if she will be able to practice because she has to have some clearance from the court to practice in the state because she's right now not allowed to practice in Florida, Dana.
Mark, the prosecuting attorney, Jeff Ashton, said that Lyon was unveiled, and you use that term too, and I like that, is in the form of an impromptu commercial. This has become very Hollywood, very glitzy, very media-ish. What's happening there, and do you think the judge will be impressed?
I don't think the judge is impressed about anything. He's not impressed with his Jose Baez's lineup. Here's the deal. This thing now is just kind of waiting. We're waiting for the trial to begin. And Baez has been, for the past 30 days or so, been saying, well, I know I can't personally try a death penalty case, but I have a superstar that will come in. Well, the judge has to okay his superstar. And so he's been kind of holding everybody with bated breath in this thing. And to a certain extent, I'm surprised that he didn't get anybody of more of a stature, but she does. I checked her website. She has a great stature, and she has great credentials, and it's going to be interesting to see how she performs if she's approved to practice in the state of Florida temporarily.
Mark Williams is here. We're discussing the Casey/Kaylee Anthony case. We haven't heard much from George and Cindy. What have they been up to?
Well, they've been up to a lot of things. I'm glad you brought that up. A complaint has been filed against George and Cindy Anthony with the Orange County Sheriff's Office. A woman by the name of Lois Peter, she's from Osceola County, which is just south of Orlando. She alleges that she put some crosses at the murder scene where the remains of little Kaylee Anthony were found just earlier this week. And what happened is George and Cindy apparently and allegedly got in their car, went to the site, took him down right away. This is all under the cover of darkness that you know. They were followed by a group from Child Finders, the founders, Dennis Milstead and his wife. Milstead has been in trouble with the law big time. And then this Lois Peter and her entourage went back and put some more things down. A car chase ensued. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
For the helicopters. And with Milstead apparently having lights like police officers use, the strobe lights and the red and flashing blue lights in his vehicle. This guy's no police officer. He's basically one step above the law. Now, she went to the sheriff's office today, signed a complaint, and Brad Conway, the Anthony's attorney, said, oh, that didn't happen. As a matter of fact, the folks from Osceola County tried to take on the Anthony's by trying to run them off the road. So this case gets stranger and stranger. And I've been working this case now. Are you ready for this? Mm-hmm. Almost a year.
Right.
And I've devoted a lot of time to this case. And this is just unbelievable.
Well, it's not the first time that Milstead's name has been brought up. allegedly involving impersonation or personation of a police officer. And let's get into him a little bit here and his organization. Now, you and I can both agree, and we've talked about it many times in my program, that anything that can be done to help the missing, help find missing kids, help families of missing kids is a good thing. But this organization and this character, in particular, Milstead, has been had a black cloud following him for some time now. Let's talk about him a little bit more, Mark.
Well, you know, I'm trying to find an email that somebody sent me. But Channel 9 did a story last fall, and they got his criminal record. This guy has defaulted on a lot of things. He's been brought up on civil charges. He's had liens placed against him. And for some odd reason, his group has never found a child. They are always hanger-oners when missing children, a story about a missing child surfaces. And they try and be do-gooders, according to them. But Kathy Bellich from Channel 9 here in Orlando just ripped them another one last fall when she obtained the criminal records of he and his wife, and they're just, how shall we say this, a step ahead of the law.
Mm-hmm. Well, a step ahead can put you three steps behind, too. Mark Williams is here,
Yeah. And
we're talking the Anthony case. What's going on with the civil lawsuit, and is Annie the nanny?
Well, right now, we're still in a holding pattern with that. I think eventually things have been placed on hold. I think eventually the judge will say to George and Cindy, you have got to answer the questions of John Morgan thoroughly and effectively, no matter how hard they hurt. The other thing is last week is when they Jose Baez, the defense attorney, unveiled his new star defense attorney, Andrea Lyons. The big thing that day was the possibility of he's still trying to get that videotape squashed,
yeah,
that allegedly shows Casey Anthony's reaction when she, as she was watching TV when they had breaking news that day saying that remains of a child had been found near their home. Supposedly, he does not want that unveiled whatsoever. He does not want that out to the public. He says that's cruel to Casey Anthony. He says that the jailer set her up to take this fall. Well, before the judge rules, Stan Strickland rules in this, he's going to ask media attorneys, listen, what do you all think of this, and you know, what should we do? He's looking for advice from both sides. Now, both sides have seen the tape, of course. I have not seen it. It has not been released. But whatever the case, Dana, it should be interesting.
I cover a lot of high-profile cases on my show, and one of those cases I cover is Drew Peterson. And when you look at the correlation between Drew Peterson and the media, and you look at the Anthony case in the media, and the difference between Florida and Illinois when it comes to releasing documents, it's unbelievable as far as what gets into the media as far as evidence in Florida. Let's talk about that a little bit, Mark, because I think it's fascinating.
It is, and a friend of mine who used to cover courts and was a TV news photographer for 28 years in northeastern Pennsylvania said you would never get the information out of Pennsylvania authorities like you do here in Florida. Florida is an open state, and I'm kind of glad that's the case, and not just because I'm a member of the media, but because it puts everything on the table. There's no surprises. When the Orlando Sentinel has been blazing the trail in Freedom of Information Act cases, getting a lot of this stuff released, and you know, thus far it's been interesting. It's been factual, and I know in some states you can't get anything from anybody, and I'm glad we're here in Florida so we can see the process, good, bad, or indifferent, as it proceeds.
Mark Williams is here. Mark, you brought up Brad Conway a while ago, and he's the attorney for George and Cindy Anthony, and they were making the media rounds. We haven't seen too much of them lately, but it's that strategy of the lawyers. And remember, George and Cindy haven't been charged with anything, but it's, a PR strategy from their perspective to hit the talk shows. But you have to wonder. And I know George and Cindy have had several different attorneys now. If and what Conway is really up to when it comes to this. Have we heard anything about the talk about charges against George and Cindy? It's been a while since that's come up.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to come up for a long time. And here's my take on everything. And I wanted to say this on the Gray Show a couple of weeks ago, but I really couldn't. But sometimes we all get the impression that even though they haven't talked to their daughter, Casey, who's been behind bars since October 18th, she still tries to manipulate them one way or another. I call the thing going on Larry King and the Today Show and every other show, the CBS Morning Show, I call this the Save Me Tour, because they're trying to plant a seed of doubt in somebody's mind and in some potential juror's mind here in Florida. I mean, this case is riveting, and the case will eventually be held somewhere in Florida. And with those cable outlets and over-the-air outlets, they are just trying to plant that seed, and I wish I had a T-shirt that said, the Save Me Tour with George and Cindy on the front.
Yeah, that means...
That's the news guy coming out of me, you know, the sarcastic news guy.
You know, and not so much sarcasm, but realism, because this has been crazy. Going right back to the days when Larry Garrison was the family spokesman to whoever is the family spokesperson now, to all the craziness that's gone on. This case has been all about Casey. Yet we don't hear all that much anymore about Kaylee, except on the Grace Show, and I give kudos for that, because the big story is there's really only one victim here, and that's that poor little girl.
Yeah, and as you've been in the news business and you've been in law enforcement for a lot of years, and the thing that I hate are people coming out of the woodwork, like the Garrisons, the Milsteads, coming out and trying to take advantage of a situation. Todd Black, who used to be the PR spokesperson for the lawyer, and he threatened to sue all of us. Mm-hmm. He threatened to sue me. He threatened to sue some of my colleagues in Orlando Radio. And, of course, I said, bring it on, big boy. And we find out that Todd Black isn't the person who he portrayed to be. That guy is a criminal as well.
Yeah, there's so many different, excuse the term, skeletons and closets here. The cast of characters is fascinating. And, Mark, when this does get to trial, and I've interviewed several authors on my program who are all going to be writing books about this, this story isn't going to be over for, I'd say, decades.
You know, we've all followed this story. Again, I've been doing it almost 11 months. And next month will be the first year that I've covered this story, and I have seen cases drag on. And the Scott Peterson thing is out in California a couple of years ago is a case that dragged on for a while. The other case in Chicago is just mind-boggling, and you know, kids keep missing, turn up missing every day, and it's a sorry state of affairs, Dana.
Yeah, and the news will cover what they can. I know Grace's program has been criticized for only focusing on Anthony, although that hasn't been that lately. However, when you have a high-profile case like this, and the case keeps feeding itself, like I say, the Energizer Bunny that keeps going and going and going, what are we, or what are you in the media supposed to do with a story? You can't just drop it.
No, you can't. And this is a story when I was working in Daytona last year at a radio station where this is going to be a three-day affair, you know, child missing, mother arrested, child found, either alive or dead, mama goes to court, and everything is right with the world from that point on, okay? But she has not confessed. She has not broken her silence. She continues to tell lies. If you take a look at the early videotapes, she was just giving these folks a runaround, the investigators, saying, they're all after me. Well, that's their job to get after you.
You know,
that's what they make the big bucks.
The investigators are the ones, the true heroes here. Those and the searchers, the people that have been involved, because they've kept quiet and they haven't gone into the limelight. The investigators could have easily been on every talk show every night, including tonight, talking about this. But really, when it came right down to it, Mark Williams, they did their job.
They did, and I knew some of the, I know some of the PR guys that work as public information officers with Orange County, the sheriff's office. I've known them for a period of time. I met them mostly when I worked in Orlando at a 5,000 watt blowtorch. But some of the investigators are just great individuals. I mean, these guys could have cracked in a heartbeat. I'm trying to think of the one guy who was there, Melich.
Right.
He could have cracked in a heartbeat. But, you know, basically it came down from high saying, you don't talk to the media about this whatsoever.
You know, the cast of characters again, and we're going to switch topics here in a second while I have Mark Williams with me, right down to everyone from Casey to George to Cindy to the brother, all of a sudden we're not hearing so much about him anymore. And boy, wasn't he the speculation king there for a while, right down to the fact that there's even speculation that he might be the father of the child. What's going on with him?
I think he has assumed his normal life as a coordinator for an events company in Orlando. He has kept a very low profile. He's not seen anymore. He doesn't go to the house much that I know of. And I think the big thing is he got his knickers in a twist when the sheriff's office set him up for that undercover surveillance. They wanted to know the truth. And it turned out that really they had nothing on him. And he's just a hothead. He's a 26-year-old hothead who doesn't know much about the world.
No.
And when people started putting wreaths and crosses on the Anthony lawn 3 days or 2 days after they discovered the body, he went ballistic. I mean, he grabbed everything.
Yeah.
But he's taken a back seat, and I think his lawyer told him, keep under the radar because you're going to be a target when this thing ever goes to trial.
Yeah, Lee Anthony and Hothead are two in the same, that's for sure. I want to ask you about the Halifax Area News Watch. I see something that looks like it may be something big for you, sir.
Well, you know, this is one thing I wanted to start. How should I say this nicely? You know, there's been a downturn in the broadcasting industry for the past 6 months or so. Some of my best friends have lost their jobs because they were too expensive. Okay,
mm-hmm.
The one gal that I deal with on the show, who comes from a radio station in Orlando, they told her she made too much money. So what happened is they demoted her to part-time. I had a friend at work at WHAM in Rochester doing morning news. One day he was off the air. They said, we don't need you anymore, and he'd been there almost 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
In my case, March 28th was a watershed. I was called upstairs, and there was my general manager and the money guy saying, we're eliminating the news department. Okay. And I says, really? Yeah, no news department, no you, and we're going to give you some severance and have yourself a nice life. Okay. So you're mad for 20 seconds, okay,
yeah.
Because you know you're better than some of the people that work there.
Right.
So over the course of the one of the things I did was I put together the website for the radio station. And I'm thinking there's no local news anyplace for people in the Halifax area, which is Volusia, Flagler, and northern Brevard County, okay?
Right.
Their website looks like crap, and mm-hmm. I'll call it to their face, mm-hmm. and I know everybody up there. So I decided to put the Halifax Area News Watch together. And so that's my answer to what they're trying to do. So I have news of the day up there, and even though they come from releases, that's where most people get their news from anyway. I rewrite a lot of them because I don't like the way these PIOs write. So I rewrite them. I also Twitter a lot. We had a major flood in Daytona Beach a couple of weeks ago. There was no local news except television covering it, and radio is supposed to be your constant companion.
Well,
so I sat in my office and I Twittered, and I have about 200 Twitterers, followers on my Twitter account at Mr. News 70.
And when you look at that, Mark, it's so sad because local news, local weather, local sports just doesn't seem to exist anymore. And people want more than just automation because, like you say, when there's a flood or there's a news story or there's something that's going on, and you got to wonder where the talking heads in the high office suites are really thinking, because letting something like that go just is just wrong.
Yeah, and you have a license. In this nation, you have a license to serve the public, okay, to serve the public interest, okay? A lot of radio stations, whether they be AM or FMs, do not serve the public interest anymore. There is a station in Orlando that has a live morning show. The rest of the day parts, 24 hours, it's all syndicated. The only saving grace is they do have a local news department.
And it's so sad. And
I
know that you have your national exposure on the Grace Show and other television shows, but your heart and soul is in radio or broadcasting. And for as long as you've done it, I'm sure that you'll continue serving the people. Because if the people weren't out there, just including my show, I don't know why we'd be here. We have to have the audience. That's what makes it worthwhile. And I know your audience is out there for you, sir.
Well, you know, one thing, Dan, is I rolled it out very softly this weekend because I was learning the software and I was trying to get some things together and I was experimenting and I just called a couple of friends around the country saying, listen, take a look at this. What do you think of it? And I got some good positive feedback. Well, now that I have more confidence in doing the software, I'm going to roll it out to the PIOs and my other media colleagues on Friday. We're all sitting down having a meeting about the hurricane season, which is upon us right now here in the state.
Yeah, and boy, will people be looking for local news then. Mark Williams, you're always welcome here, my friend.
Thank you very much, Dana. Good to be with you tonight, man.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, take care.
That's Mark Williams, and he's a true blue broadcaster, and I'm sure that he will continue on Nancy Grace and other programs, and local news is what it's all about, and he will be there to fill in for that, I'm sure. My name's Dana Pretzer. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back. My next guest, Wendy Murphy, you'll know as an author, former DA, victims advocate, law professor. Her blog is at www.thedailybeast.com, and she has an interesting story about the Huckabee case, and is there a porn connection to that, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But I wanted to start out with Wendy as a former DA and one who follows high-profile cases on the news because she commentates on them on all the cable channels. Is this Tiller case, are we turned to that sort of a society now where we have this vigilante sorts of killing? Wendy, this is a big story. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it really is, Dana. Boy, I don't know where to begin because on the one hand, I think folks are saying he's not so much anti-abortion as he is just a kind of a domestic terrorist who was looking for a way to make a mark and express himself and protest and so forth. And, that may be. I don't know too much about him except what I've been reading. But I will tell you this. Vigilantism is a sign, usually, that people feel the system isn't working.
Right.
So whatever side of the abortion debate you're on, if somebody feels like they can take the law into their own hands, I tend to think of that as an expression of frustration that the legal system isn't working as well as it should. Now, that could be completely wrong with him, but I always start there. The other thing I guess I would say is that, these are the moments when I just think to myself, is it because we don't respect each other enough? I mean, I am very firmly pro-choice. I have 5 children of my own, and I still feel very strongly that it should be the woman's choice, and that the government should never dictate that a woman should birth children.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not my philosophy. Nevertheless, I can respect the religious perspective, and I just, I'm kind of stuck in a space where I don't know where to move from there, but why can't we sit in the same room with each other and understand that people who are opposed to late-term abortions for religious grounds, you can disagree with them all day long on political grounds, but that doesn't mean they don't have a respectable position. So as firmly pro-choice as I am, I think one of the ways you keep people from developing frustration and vigilante ideas is to say, I hear you, I understand, I don't agree, but I respect your position. And I don't think we've done that with the abortion debate. I think it's been a polemical, very, very, frustrating debate for a very long time, and it's because people feel strongly about their positions, and there's never going to be middle ground for some people, and that's fine. But boy, when you get to the point where people are being shot dead for doing not only what is legal, but constitutionally legal, a right, not just a negative right, but an affirmative right, and frankly, medically required. I mean, if a woman might die if she didn't have a late-term abortion and a doctor declined to do it, he could probably be prosecuted for manslaughter. So you got doctors in a very difficult position facing threats from anti-choice advocates and, facing deep medical ethical dilemmas on their own, and women who may die but for these procedures. You know, it's not an easy controversy, but one of the good things is this story has literally brought people to the table to express themselves, and what I'm hearing for the most part, except from some of the really extreme crazy people, what I'm hearing for the most part is even the people who are religiously and deeply personally opposed to abortion have said, this is unacceptable, this is uncivilized, it's not the way we want to handle the debate or the controversy. So I hope that kind of conversation continues.
Yeah, and it's not the society that we live in, and you know Bill O'Reilly, and he has covered this story, I thought, very well for many years now about George Tiller. But you'll have the left wing fringe, the kooks that are out there. You'll have the right wing. You'll have the whole abortion issue is not just new.
You know what's funny? I think, of course, anyone who wants to yell at Bill O'Reilly will use this to say, oh, it's Bill's fault. He whipped everybody into a frenzy. You know, people have strong opinions about a lot of different folks on all sides of the political spectrum, and nobody blames anybody when something horrific happens. So I think it's a little bit rude to suggest that Bill O'Reilly has something to do with this.
Right.
And yet, you know, the politicization of this issue is also not news. So I think Bill's got thick skin, and he could certainly anticipate this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think what people do with the story matters almost more than what happened. You know, how we move from this is what matters most, and that's why I'm watching the conversation and the dialogue and the coverage, and in particular, watching Bill O'Reilly's reaction, because people want to know how he feels. They want to know how they feel. It's hard. It's a very hard issue.
Oh, it is. And to be in a place like that, like O'Reilly, who, again, I say has covered this very well and has responded to it very well, is difficult. But it's a societal issue, I think, Wendy, as much as anything. When we see an execution like this take place, and maybe, like you say, there will be some positive dialogue come out of this where, yes, we can agree to disagree, but shootings and bombings and attacks and all this sort of stuff is not the way to do it. Anyway, I brought you on to night, and I kind of sprung that one on you a little bit, but I knew you would talk to me about it.
I didn't know you were going to ask me, but it's okay.
You know, it was a last-second decision of mine, but I want to talk about the Huckabee murder case and the child porn connection. You and I have talked about that when, you know, even with the Anthony case and other cases before, and how big and how evil the porn industry is, especially when you start looking at child porn, the internet, you name it. Again, your blog story talks about this possible connection. Let's get into that.
Yeah, boy, you know, it's so hard, Dana, because I often start off my articles, and I've written more than one for the dailybeast.com on the Huckabee case, but I often start off by saying, sorry, but what I'm writing about is just what's been released. Let's be honest here. Most of what exists in terms of evidence in this case is being withheld, and that's the most frustrating thing of all. I think it's fair to say the gag order in the Huckabee case is so vast that we're probably hearing less than 10% of the evidence. And so we have to speculate a little bit. We have to read through the lines, or as I like to put it, in some cases, squint through the lines. And doing that, and so admitting out loud that this is speculative, it's also based on a reasoned judgment mixed together with speculation. And what I'm concerned about is that sometimes if we're not hearing the whole truth, we latch on to even absurd explanations. For example, I think, and this is really what I'm articulating in my piece, people look at Melissa Huckabee and think, well, this is a crazy woman who, for no apparent reason, is running around California just cavalierly sticking benzodiazepines into people and drugging people just because she's a crazy lunatic.
Right.
And, you know, we forget that, first of all, it makes no sense that she would do that. That's just not, doesn't really fit with an existing model of crime that anyone can point to. And when it doesn't fit, you have to ask, well, what are we missing? What else can we be thinking about? And so, you know, let's remember that, yes, she's been connected to the apparent intentional drugging of at least two kids and an adult male. And the allegations include not just that she did it for arbitrary reasons, but there were sexual things going on, at least with regard to Sandra Cantu. Very likely, it's suspected that that sort of thing was also going on with the second child, the more recent allegations involving the, I think she was an 8-year-old child or 7-year-old child. But the reason I say that is because the little girl who went missing for 4 hours, the one involved in the most recent charges,
right,
was apparently tested, according to what we've read, she was tested so that biologically we have proof. The mother took her to the hospital, and they found out she had benzodiazepines in her system. I've written more than once, anyone who knows the child porn business understands the perpetrators will use drugs like benzos because they have amnestic features. Anyone who's had a kid go in for minor surgery or major surgery knows that the doctors will give you what's called Versed, which is a benzo drug, and it's not a painkiller, but it causes the child to become, it doesn't knock the child out, it causes the child to feel sedated, and then when the child comes out of surgery, they have absolutely no memory of the period of entering the surgical room and what goes on in there, which can be very scary for kids. So benzo drugs serve a nice purpose. If you're trying to do child porn or sexual exploitation, you give a child a drug that sedates them and has amnestic features. The good news is when the child comes out of there, sedation, they can't remember what you did to them while they were under the influence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's nice if you're trying not to get caught, which is true of the child porn industry. Now, does that prove child porn charges? No. But is it an important conversation to talk about and important angle to talk about, important conversation to have? Absolutely. And until somebody says to me, Wendy, you're wrong. I understand why you think child porn might be involved, but you're wrong. Until somebody in a position to say so says this is a bad theory, that we're barking up the wrong tree, I'm going to continue to put it out there. And if somebody in a position to say so tells me I'm wrong, then I'll stop saying it. But for now, I think it's a reasonable hypothesis. And remember, and this is the most important thing I can say about the most recent charges, that little girl, she was taken to the hospital. She was missing for 4 hours. She was taken to the hospital. They found out she had benzos in her system. And then the police did nothing.
Yeah.
And what does that tell us? It suggests that when they interviewed her, she didn't remember anything that had happened. Well, turns out, now that they found out about Sandra Cantu and that she had been raped, including rape with a foreign object, now they go back to this little girl and do a sexual assault exam. Well, why would you do a sexual assault exam on a child who previously only reported that she was under the influence of drugs of some sort? It's because the police believe the reason she was sedated has something to do with sexual abuse and exploitation, and that all of this stuff is a pattern. It's a course of conduct. Melissa Huckabee was involved. But let's be clear about one thing, Dana. I've said it before. I say it in my piece. I'll say it again. The fact that Melissa Huckabee is connected to three different victims now in terms of sedating them does not mean she acted alone, and it could mean she's been a mule for the pornographers who have used her to go and get other victims, get new material. It's not uncommon. It is a little funky, I have to say, that she sedated an older man. I think he was 36 years old, an ex-boyfriend. But here's an interesting issue. He was at her trailer. He was at her home around midnight when he was reportedly sedated, where she lives with her grandparents.
Yep.
So presumably this is a small place that she lived in. Why was she sedating him in her trailer where she lived with her grandparents and her child? Were they sedating him because they didn't want him to know what was going on? Was there some other thing going on? Why can't the grandparents speak publicly about whatever they saw? Remember, Sandra Cantu went to this trailer and disappeared at that trailer. Presumably, according to the accounts I've read, Melissa Huckabee's grandmother was there at the time Sandro Cantu arrived and then disappeared in the suitcase, apparently. So, or allegedly. So, what did the grandmother know? Why aren't they speaking? Are the grandparents represented by counsel? Why would they be represented by counsel? I just can't believe that all this horrific stuff is happening in this tiny little trailer, and this relatively uneducated sort of sad sack of a woman is so sophisticated. She's getting away with all these terrible things, and she's got drugs, and she's drugging these people, and she's doing these dastardly things, and everybody else around her knows nothing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, she can't be a sort of a dimwit and a genius at the same time. There's got to be more to the story. We know that 1,000 pages of evidence were handed over to the defense attorney, who asked for additional time to review the materials, including computer files taken from not only the church down the road where her grandfather was the pastor, but from a computer in the trailer. Why are they handing computer files to the defense attorney? You know what computer files suggest. I'll tell you this much. You don't tend to get good evidence out of computer files in the run-of-the-mill criminal case, but guess what? Child porn, child sexual exploitation, computers are very common. Common parts of the search warrants and the seizure of evidence and so forth. Does this prove that it's a child porn case? No. Is it an important conversation to have? Absolutely.
Yeah, and it is. And when you say that you won't stop saying it until somebody says something to you, I don't think you should stop saying it at all, because it's an education issue. It's one that's not looked at. It's maybe, I won't say ignored, but it's not understood enough. And the more we get into it, because it is such a big industry, the more we need to educate people. Now, I've only got about 5 minutes left with you, Wendy, and I would mm-hmm. I would be remiss without asking you your thoughts on John and Kate plus 8. Now, let's get back from that a little bit, the initial laugh about it, because I would do the same thing. But there has been a big call. In fact, I believe that there's an investigation going on right now with some child labor laws and the talk about exploitation and these young children. As an advocate, as a victim's rights person, as someone who fights for kids, are these young kids on this television show being exploited?
Well, you know, if I knew the answer to that, I guess I would be a really smart person, because I think the answer is more complicated than here's what it looks like to me. This is what I would say. The labor laws differ state to state. Pennsylvania, where they live, is not a particularly rigorous state when it comes to labor laws related to the entertainment industry, unlike in California, where movies are made and television shows are made, and so the laws are quite protective. And also, labor laws in terms of the entertainment business were not really developed with reality shows in mind. So there's stuff about the way the wording is that, you know, raises questions about whether the laws even apply. That said, I think it's fair to say the kids are working. The
yeah.
fact that they're being filmed just living doesn't persuade me that it's not work, because they're making money.
Mm-hmm.
They're making money being filmed in their home. That's enough for me to believe that the labor laws should apply. There's a different set of rules when you're under age 7 and over age 7. It happens to be the case that John and Kate have kids in both categories. Once you get a little bit older, they have to comply with things like making sure they have education and counseling, and that they're not doing so much work that they're not getting their other needs met. But my bottom line is this. When parents are making money off of their own children, you cannot trust parents to make a good decision for their children, because the money is incredible
yep.
pressure. Even good parents can be dissuaded from doing the right thing, because they see this as their way of paying the bills. They can make the right decisions for themselves and not really be thinking about the best interests of their kids. Now, we don't have good data on how kids feel when they're being exploited in these kinds of television programs, because this is a relatively new genre, the reality show that the little kids are involved in. But we do know this. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to appreciate that human beings feel exploited when they're used as entertainment, period. And even kids who were child stars 30, 40, 50 years ago will talk about how difficult it is to grow up and to deal with the different ways of being valued as a human being. What we know about these kids is, even at age 5, as little as that is, they're saying things to their aunts and uncles and to family members who are speaking out we don't want these cameras coming with us on vacation. And, you know, I haven't seen the show very often, but when I have, I've noticed what I would describe as pretty significant intrusions into their intimate lives, whether it's because they're sobbing or, yeah, you know, picking their nose or doing something that kids do but they don't really want the world to see, or even they're in the bathroom, you know, on the toilet, learning how to be potty trained. It's not right to exploit a child, and one of the reasons people get away with it is because kids can't express themselves. They know that it doesn't feel right, but they don't understand the concept of exploitation. Yep. They're not mature enough. They're not sophisticated enough. But you can damn well bet that 5 years, 10 years from now, when all the suffering kicks in and they start to understand these complex ideas, they're going to be harder to fix. You can't really go back in time and fix the brain that was suffering now. And then I think the other thing that's just grotesque, and I laugh about it because the family seems to be having this, you know, meltdown on the world stage, it is funny. In a sense, it's a very tabloidish kind of funny thing to watch the parents go through their hokey problems with their marriage. And as a voyeuristic, you know, sort of Dr. Schadenfreude or whatever the hell his name is kind of thing goes, they bought into it.
Yep.
They put themselves on display. They need to be laughed at when they need to be laughed at. It, you know, you can't just sign up for the good stuff. They signed up. They said, we want a ton of money. You get to watch the good stuff. Well, we get to watch the bad stuff, too. They're apparently melting down in front of all of us. It's a little weird, but it's the nature of the business. What I worry about is, how do these kids feel? Hearing about mom and dad, and they're not getting along, that's bad enough. And then they're hearing dad's shacking up with some young chickie down the road, and the, you know, the bed is shaking and the walls are... I mean, I can't even imagine my children hearing a story like that. And they're much older. I can't understand how a 5-year-old or a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old can process that kind of information and then figure out how to manage it in their little lives.
Yeah.
It's not as if they don't live in a community. They do. They've got friends. They go to school. People are going to know stuff. I don't know that it's just a question of, are these kids being exploited? I think it's so much bigger than that. But ultimately, it comes down to making sure that an outside person, a third-party observer without a financial interest, stands up in a guardian-like fashion for those kids and says, I don't care how much money there is to be made, this is good for them, this is bad for them, and so forth. So the Department of Labor, even the Department of Social Services, which could investigate separately and say, I don't care about labor laws, these kids are being neglected, they're not being treated well. And so we're going to look at it from a child services or child protective services perspective. Those outside agencies have a duty to get involved, especially in a case like this, where the parents obviously not only have a lot of financial pressure to keep the show going, but the network and the people around them and the advertisers. I mean, there's so much financial pressure to keep this show going. That's when you need government agencies to step up and say, we don't care what you want. We're here for the kids. This isn't about money. It's about their well-being. They are human beings. They are not commodities. So that's the good news, and I'm glad to see the investigation is underway.
Yeah, me too, that's for sure. Wendy, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, too, Dana. Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. That's Wendy Murphy, and one thing you can say about John and Kate Plus 8 is their premiere episode beat Conan O'Brien's premiere episode in the ratings, and that's a huge thing for the Learning Channel. Are the children being exploited? You bet your boots they are. I'm Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and I'm having problems finding my Nothing But the Sacks correspondent, Robin Sacks, tonight. I know that in 10 minutes she'll be on Justice Interrupted Radio over on Blog Talk Radio, so check her out there. And she has a new book out called It Happens Every Day, or is going to be coming out with a new book called It Happens Every Day. And you also have to remember her other book that we promote here on the program, and make sure and check it out, called Predators and Child Molesters, What Every Parent Needs to Know to Keep Kids Safe. So I apologize that I haven't been able to pick up Robin on the program tonight. I'm not sure what the problem is, as I keep getting issues with her cell phone. So I'm going to do something that I don't do very often, and we'll see if you're interested in calling in. 1-306-842-7884. 1-306-842-7884. You can call in and talk about anything you like. We've got about, I'd say, 4 or 5 minutes to do that. I won't keep you on the air long. It isn't toll-free. So you have to pick up the dime, but you can call in and comment on anything. What do you think of Susan Boyle? And, I don't often watch those types of American Idol programs or British Talent or whatever that show was called, but I was somewhat fascinated with Susan Boyle, and it was interesting to see what happened with her and to see the human side of it. Apparently she had some problems coping with everything and the popularity and the paparazzi and all that sort of stuff, and I wish her the best. She certainly can sing. Apparently there's some mental health issues, allegedly, that she has to deal with, coping with all of this fame and fandom, and it's not for everyone. I'm not sure how well the show handled it. The British, and I'm not trying to pick on them by any means, but they seem to handle these shows a little bit differently, and even Simon Cowell had to apologize to her for how she was treated the first time she came on the show. But say what you want, she can certainly sing. And it should be interesting to see where she goes. You don't always have to have the pretty face in order to be able to sing a song. And some of those with pretty faces who think they can sing certainly can't. I do want to also remind you that our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can pick up shows from the past, archives of past programs, commentaries. You can leave comments. You can do whatever you want there, well, within reason. And I think we go back probably a couple of years with the programs there. And one thing I would be remiss without commenting on is the fact that another anniversary has passed, and Natalie Holloway is still waiting, and her family is still waiting for justice. The Aruban government have done everything that they can to cover up, to obstruct, to not assist. And like I've said before, justice is served in many ways, and all we can hope is that someday justice will be served and Natalie will be brought home. It may not be through a court of law, because anything is possible over there, but at least that child should be brought home to her family, where she belongs. I'm Dana Pretzer. That's tonight's show. Again, I apologize for the lack of Nothing But the Sex, but she'll be back next week, and we'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Good night.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.